This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to The Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the show. This is Jason Hartman, your host, and every 10th episode, we do something kind of special, kind of different. What we do is we go off topic. So regardless of which show it is on the Hartman Media Network, whether it be one of the financial shows, economics, real estate investing, travel, longevity, all of the other topics that we have, every 10th episode, we go off topic and we explore something of general interest, something of general life success value. And so many of our listeners around the world in 164 countries have absolutely loved our 10th episode shows. So that's what we're going to do today. And let's go ahead and get to our guest with a special 10th episode show. And of course, on the next episode, we'll be back to our regular programming. Here we go. It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Gina Loudon to the show. She is a Trump campaign advisor and member of his 2020 Advisory Council. She's host of the TV show America Trends, author of Ladies and Gentlemen, Why the Survival of Our Republic Depends on the Revival of Honor, and her new book, Mad Politics, Keeping Your Sanity in a World Gone Crazy. And she's got another book as well. Gina, welcome. How are you?
I am doing great. Thank you. My show is actually every day on Newsmax from 12 to 3, and it's called America Talks Live. Just an update since the last time I was on your show. So I hope people will join me there.
Good stuff. Tell us about your latest book, Mad Politics. I mean, probably everyone listening would agree that politics has become a little mad, hasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly has. And I think, you know, a lot of times we take a really close look at what's happening either politically or economically on the national and international level, but we forget to talk about the why of what is happening, because mm-hmm. that's what really is interesting. And that's what makes economic cycles and that's what makes political cycles predictable. It's looking at where we've been historically, it's looking at where we are, and it's looking at how we got there and why we got there. What were people thinking? What's different about how people are thinking right now than how people were thinking a year ago, 5 years ago, 100 years ago? And so the psychology is often sort of left out of the conversation. And really, that's my background. It's really important to inject it once in a while so that all of this makes a little bit more sense contextually.
Okay, good. Well, unpack that if you would. It sounds fascinating.
If you take just today, you know, people say, oh my gosh, politics is crazy. It's so divisive. It's this, it's that. And in some ways they're right. But in other ways, it's more of an appearance of crazy. There's a very small minority that's very vocal and very well paid by George Soros who do seem to be taking our politics to a fever pitch of crazy. But again, it's a very small amount of people. You know, just the other day, I watched the Kavanaugh confirmation vote from the West Wing of the White House with some of the comms team there. As you mentioned, I serve on the President's Media Advisory Board. And afterwards, I decided I would walk over and see what I was seeing on TV, see all of these crazy, crazy protesters. And when I looked for them, I realized, first of all, there weren't many. There was a small nucleus of protesters there, surrounded by people who were protesting the protesters in favor of Kavanaugh, actually. But when you watch television, but when you watch television, all you were seeing was this massive crowd of what looked like protesters, because the vantage point they had was from inside that small nucleus of very vocal, kind of crazy protesters.
Right.
So I think it's really important to take a look at everything contextually, and we ask ourselves, why is the media portraying, even some of the more conservative media was portraying this as a massive protest against Kavanaugh. But the question is why? Why would they do that?
Right.
And again, we look at the psychology here, and I think it's very important to say, you know, news has changed. We've become a clickbait media world, and I incorporated an entire chapter in my book.
I saw that,
About clickbait media and why that has played so much into what we think we see on television that may not be true reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very good points, Gina. And, you know, just to put it in context, at the beginning of our talk today, you mentioned how things were 100 years ago, what people thought back then. Let me tell you, folks, things were divisive throughout history. When you look at the history of the U.S., the history of the world, I mean, it's not like we're so divided now necessarily even. I mean, there were vociferous, violent arguments in the past. I mean, read some of these old editorials in the newspapers, you know, from the olden days. And is it really any different now? Is it just sensationalized differently, you know?
Well, it's sensationalized and we're seeing it. Instead of seeing a picture of it drawn in ink and put in a newspaper, we're seeing it splashed across our television. Instead of news being broadcast from bureaus with very few live shots from the actual action, we've all become citizen journalists. So there's very little that isn't transferred onto social media, and we see it all, and the news media gets a hold of it and they go haywire with it. Also, there's very little accountability to journalists, and I would count myself in that. You know, I'm a commentator, I'm not a journalist,
right,
per se, even though I did study communications in my background. The majority of my study was in psychology, as I mentioned, and the majority of my life has been spent as a very outspoken conservative, and I don't hide from that. But I think the danger is when news media outlets do hide from that reality that they do have an opinion. And I think perhaps we all have opinions. Maybe we should just admit that and just all give our perspective, because I don't believe whether you take the most rock solid traditional journalist from the 1970s, you know, whoever you want to, whatever name you want to come up with, they still had opinions. They were still partisan in their own way. Most people make a decision when you deal with politics every single day, one side or the other, or perhaps choosing neither side. But nonetheless, I think we should be more honest and transparent about that.
Right.
I also think that a lot of transparency has been demanded. I think that this president is particularly transparent, and he's caused the American people to expect more transparency. So I suspect we'll see more of that forthcoming. But I think the thing that's important to note here, and I say this very clearly in Mad Politics, no, you're not crazy in all likelihood. I happen to think that the world does seem crazy. You're not imagining it. It's true. It's a clickbait media. But two, I believe we have one of the most sound-minded people occupying the White House right now in our nation's history. And I said that on Sean Hannity's
It's interesting that he's been so vilified, and it's just crazy what's going on. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I said it on Sean Hannity's show a couple of weeks ago, and Sean said liberal heads are going to explode and they're going to come after you with pitchforks, practically.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened right after that. They actually accosted my ratings on Amazon for my book, Mad Politics, and made it so that nobody could rate the book anymore. I went down from 5 stars to 3 stars, and they froze the stars there. And it's been sort of a saga ever since then, simply because I said that I think the
Gina, aren't those the tolerant, open-minded, accepting liberals? I mean, that's how they claim to be.
Right, they do, but they're not. They're only tolerant of their own ideas,
right,
and we know that now. But, you know, I was contrasting my book at that point on John's show with a book by Mr. Woodward that had come out the same week. And in the book by Woodward, he declares the president completely mentally incompetent, if not fully insane. On the one hand, he has zero background in mental health, where I have 3 postgraduate degrees and an undergrad in psychology. My 3 postgraduate degrees are in varying fields of human behavior as well. I happen to know the president and his family. In an interview I did with Laura Trump just the other day at Trump Tower, she made the point that she's never even met Mr. Woodward, and yet he writes a lot about the Trump family and their derangement, when maybe it's the flip case of that. And I can say this based on sound school philosophy, that's not too wonky, if you will. Things like, this president has endured more scorn and ridicule and constant firing at him and his family, and has yet managed to have 1 to 6 hours on average. And that's with zero help, my friends, from the mainstream media, the Democrats certainly, and even in many cases from his own party. So to be that productive would be highly, highly unusual for anyone suffering from any sort of mental deficiency. As most of us know, who've ever known anyone with a mental deficiency, their number one problem, you see, they lay in bed, they can't function well, they don't focus well in social situations and all the rest.
Love or hate what he's doing, he's getting a lot done.
Precisely.
Yeah, no question about it. Yeah, those are just ridiculous comments. I mean, look at, and you know, I must say, I'm not a huge Trump fan, but I have said all along he's going to be great for the economy, and that prediction came true 100%. But what almost makes me want to support him more is this vile just venom from the left. And it's so illogical, it's so ridiculous, and it's so unfounded. I mean, I was talking with one of my liberal friends recently, and she was saying to me, well, don't you care about the country? And I said, well, what's wrong with the country? I mean, explain it to me. She had nothing. She doesn't even know what she's talking about. She just said, but what about the country? Well, what about it? The economy is booming. Unemployment is the lowest it's been in 49 years. Americans, blue-collar Americans, have had their first real dollar wage increase in 41 years. GDP has skyrocketed. Jobs are coming back to America. We're not in a thousand wars. What exactly is so wrong with the country? She had no idea. She had nothing to say.
And you make a great point that, you know, we are actually living in the most healthy, happy, prosperous, trouble-free, safe times, and not in just American history, but in world history. So I think it's sad that we don't take time to really stop and just enjoy that, right? I mean, why, when we are living in such prosperous times, are we being sold this bill of goods that we should somehow be desperate and sad and divided? No. I tell people, take time to stop and smell the roses. You know, even if you didn't vote for this president, no doubt you've contributed to this economy in your own ways. Stop and enjoy it, for crying out loud. These are the best times of our lives, the best times of any human beings living in any place, any time in history. We should be enjoying this. And so I really do encourage my readers in Mad Politics to do exactly that and to share in some of that with their friends, because I think that's a really important thing. If we don't stop to enjoy it, then what the heck are we working so hard for?
Absolutely, no question about it. Gina, I want to go back to what you're talking about your chapter in the book on clickbait politics. Explain to the listeners, if you will, just what is clickbait and how do you mean it in the political arena? The way the media landscape has changed with the internet is truly mind-boggling. And I have commented a lot about how we are all becoming more like ourselves, because never before has advertising and media of every type, advertorial, you know, a true editorial, been targeted at us. It follows us now. You know, maybe before we used to read a liberal or a conservative newspaper because that's what we believed and liked. But nowadays, it literally seeks us out. It stalks us. The ideas that are like what we already believe, because the profiling is so good and scary at the same time nowadays, that we're just becoming more like ourselves, right? Every belief we have is just reinforced over and over again. That's never happened in history before.
Right. Well, if you were a millionaire or billionaire in the 1970s, for example, you could buy yourself a newspaper or buy yourself a network or a local television station, and you could put out whatever you want. And you knew that you were going to get a certain amount of subscribers because there weren't that many competitors. And you knew that you were going to get a certain amount of eyeballs on your evening news program every single night because, hey, there were only three major networks and only one or two local affiliates. So there really wasn't the competition there is now with the advent of the internet and the citizen journalist. So that has provided for such a level of competition that salacious headlines became the only way to get eyeballs on your television or your newspaper. As a result, especially leftist-leaning networks and newspapers, sales were vastly diminished. We hear all the time how the ratings on the national networks that are left-leaning are plummeting. The newspapers are closing down, laying people off, because now there's so much more competition with the advent of the internet and the citizen journalist and social media.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's the problem. And so to get you, they have to, you're right, they stalk you, they write things that aren't true. That's what clickbait means. Literally, you're like a fish on the end of that hook, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to snag you, and they're going to follow you around, and they're going to go to where you hang out, and they're going to, you know, get your information from places that they probably shouldn't if they can buy a list here or there and the rest of it. And so, yes, we have to be very aware that a lot of, you know, if there's not, you know, we all know the term, if it bleeds, it leads. If there's not controversy, it's not going to sell. So they're not going to write about how great these economic times are and say, hey, why don't you go have an extra glass of wine and take a vacation? They're not. They want to sell you the newspaper. They want to attract your eyeballs to their network. And so they're going to say whatever it takes to make you stop and click or turn the channel onto them. And that has become much more of an art form than it ever used to be.
Right. No question about it. The other thing that's interesting, and I wrote an article about this maybe 14 years ago. Well, no, more than that, about 16 years ago, actually. And it was the concept I call the monologue media versus the dialogue media. And what's so interesting about that is that we have seen examples over and over again of how the left, they cannot withstand the scrutiny of debate, whether it be on the campus of Berkeley or any other college campus in the country or any media channel. And if you think about it, all of the old media that is dying out, as you say, is the left-leaning media that is a monologue. It's book publishing, it's newspapers, it's old-fashioned television, where they tell the story and we get to listen. Yet the dialogue media, talk radio and the blogosphere, is controlled more so by the right. And my argument is that it's because those ideas can withstand debate. On talk radio, you can call and you can argue with Rush Limbaugh. You can't do that with NBC, right? You can't do that with the New York Times. I mean, yes, they have an op-ed page, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's nothing, though. Any thoughts about that monologue versus dialogue media concept?
Well, I think it's interesting. I find it interesting that most of the conservative talk show hosts who had trimmed their monologue to allow for more dialogue have now actually gone back to the long format of monologues. If you look at Sean Hannity's show, for example, now his monologue lasts 20 minutes. That mm-hmm. time used to be spent with a political panel, if you'll remember, and even he had his mm-hmm. town hall meetings. Yeah. So the demand for media that agrees with us has increased, and we want to hear more of our ideas reflected.
Because we're becoming more like ourselves, yeah.
Because we're becoming more like ourselves, yeah. Exactly as you said. But I think it's important to note that, and I write about this in Mad Politics as well, there are three sorts of people in this world, and I cite the source of that, and I can't think of it off the top of my head, but three types of people. There are those who want to control people. There are those who want to be controlled. And then there are those who want nothing to do with either of those two items, that we don't want to control anyone and we don't want to be controlled. Mm-hmm. So we are the normal people out here who cannot understand for the life of ourselves why in the world you would want to control anyone and why you would want to be controlled.
Right.
But the job of those who want to control others, and this is critical, mm-hmm. the job of those who want to control others is to increase the size pool of those who want to be controlled. So we saw it when slavery happened. You know, they had to continue to increase the number of slaves that they could control so that they could keep the numbers of people who believed and subscribed to that heinous theory of slavery. Now we see it again. We see the people who are out there pounding on the Supreme Court doors, wearing pink hats designed as genitalia on our national
disgusting
mall.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. We see this over and over again. We see it, of course, even within the swamp. You know, what the Federal Reserve has done, what they did under Obama, contrasted but with what they've done under President Trump. Most of us smell a rat when we look at that. Yet, we understand what's going on. So you look at those who want to control and those who want to be controlled, and you look at things like illegal immigration, which is a hot topic for the day. Those who want to control people need more illegals in the country to vote for them because they're not going to have their bearings. They're not going to understand American constitutional governance, and they're more likely to vote for someone who's going to give them free stuff because they're going to be in a hurry to realize the American dream and not realize that actually, when you get free stuff, you're enslaved, right? Mm-hmm. Basic economic principle that most Americans understand.
Right.
People from a second or third world country yeah. who came here illegally are not going to understand that. And those who want to control others are counting on illegal immigrants' inability to understand that mm-hmm. and willingness to be enslaved for their votes and their power and their money that will go straight into the pockets of those who want to control people. They can't get Americans to vote for them. So what do? They import foreign votes. And that's a lot of what we're seeing right now in our culture. And that's the reason why, for example, in the Kavanaugh hearings, you know, we thought that was about maybe what, abortion? Is that what we thought? We thought this was a moral issue? No. This was never that. This was an economic issue. This is about the money that goes into Democrat coffers. $1.5 million of taxpayer-funded money, regardless of how you feel about abortion, from an economic standpoint, this is an affront to taxpayers who don't pay any other private company. We're not forced to pay any other private company $1.5 million every single day of taxpayer funds, but we are forced to pay that to Planned Parenthood. Democrats didn't want to lose that. They want to hold on to that money, or they know their party is imploding quickly. So that's what the Kavanaugh confirmation was really about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crazy stuff. It's really crazy. Okay, so any other points you want to make before you go? Questions I didn't ask you, you take it.
I want to give people assurance that I watched this president. I've seen him in the White House. I've seen him at Mar-a-Lago. I happen to live in Palm Beach, and I am a member of Mar-a-Lago, so I see him from time to time here as well. Not from time to time. I mean, during the season when he's here, he's here. And I see him many weekends, most weekends. And I've gotten to know he and his family very well. I've traveled a little bit with his family and gotten to know them even better, members of his family. And I just want to assure people that whether or not you like his tactics, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, beginning of this segment.
He's not the most likable guy. I can see why people wouldn't like him because
disagree with you on that.
It's okay. Yeah.
Because I know him personally, and I'm fine disagreeing with you on that as well. I can see that some of his tactics maybe aren't the more Midwestern or genteel or however you want to call it. He's a New Yorker. He doesn't hide from that. He's a straight talker. He's a counterpuncher. People may not like that, but I can tell you he is one of the kindest, most compassionate, loving, loyal people you could ever know in your life. I always say if he has any faults, one, he's too honest, and two, he's too loyal. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If that's how I go down in history, is too honest and too loyal, I'll take those as faults. And I know him very well. I know people driving in his motorcade. He'll pull his car over here in Palm Beach, and he'll take people holding signs out to lunch. A guy with a bike that's broken along the side of the road, he'll be the one that stops the limousine and gives the guy $500 and says, go buy yourself a new bike. I know numerous families that he's put their children through school, and there's no mention of this ever in the media.
Right, of course not. So, yeah.
To say he's not likable, I really think if every American could know him, like I've had the blessing and opportunity to get to know him. And mind you, I worked to elect him without knowing him. I got to know him after he was elected.
Right.
But I can assure you, if you knew him, you would love him. To know this man is to love him. And I really believe that if every American could just know him the way that I know him and his family, they are a very lovable, compassionate group of people. And I just want to reassure Americans that that's who they have at the helm right now, in addition to his fabulous policies that even you who don't like him admit you like his policies, and they are renewing America.
In all fairness, I shouldn't say I don't like him. Look, when I was 24 years old, I read his book, The Art of the Deal, and I wanted to be a big real estate mogul like Donald Trump. So I do like him. I can just see why he's thought of as not likable. I mean, he says some pretty outlandish stuff, and that may be part of his genius. I will freely admit that. That works. I mean, look at the success of his campaign. It was incredible. He spent hardly any money on advertising, yet he got all that free media play. That was genius. Love him or hate him, it's genius. It was incredible.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No, he does do a great job with that. He's a master marketer in addition to being a good businessman. And he's also a great storyteller. And I have a feeling that I think for the rest of American history and really for the rest of world history, Donald Trump is going to be a story people are going to want to tell. And we are going to be among the most blessed in all of history to have been alive during the Trump administration. So I just encourage people to go out and get a copy of my book, Mad Politics. I do dissect and break down the psychology, his family birth order, his personality type, and other things that I think make him who he is. Mm-hmm. And I want to reassure people with this book. And I also want to teach them how to love the people that disagree with him. There's also a chapter in this book on that, as well as my own personal journey into the realm that has become this presidency. So.
It's really interesting that you have such an amazing background in psychology and then talking about that in the political arena. Fascinating stuff. Gina, give out your website.
Yeah, my website is drginalowden.com. I think it is drginashow.com. I think we'll also get you there. My book is available on Amazon and anywhere fine books are sold. And I would especially love your audiences to try to review my book on Amazon if they can. Amazon has to shut it down periodically because the left has orchestrated such an organized campaign against my book. They do not want my message out there, which is all the more reason why it needs to be out there.
Well, and we didn't even mention that the owner, well, the founder of Amazon, obviously did a very concerted attack against Trump with his Washington Post reporters. So, yeah, there are enemies all over the place. But yeah, enemies of free speech everywhere. Okay, well, Gina, thank you so much for joining us. And folks, go check it out and check out her website as well. And thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.